Lakuta Sichas, Chelik Yudzayin, Parshas Kedoshim, Sicha Aleph. Today we're going to travel through the first Sicha of Parshas Kedoshim in volume 17 of Lakuta Sichas. We're not going to study it in the text, but we will present it as the Rebbe lays it out in the Sicha. It is a lengthy Sicha, a fascinating Sicha, and it's a Hadron, a celebration of the conclusion of studying Maseches Sanhedrin, the tractate of Sanhedrin. In our Parsha in Kedoshim, we have the mitzvah of Loisig Naivu, don't steal. Now, this is not the first time that this mitzvah appears in the Torah. In the Aseres HaDibros, in the Ten Commandments, number 8 is Loisig Naivu, don't steal. And the Gemara tells us, and Rashi mentions this in his commentary on the Torah, that the two are not the same, it's not a repetition of the same prohibition. In the Aseres HaDibros of the Ten Commandments, we're referring to stealing in the sense of kidnapping, stealing another human being. But in our parsha, in this week's parsha, Loisig Naivu means stealing in the conventional sense, stealing property, stealing money, etc., etc. And that's what we're going to be focusing on, thievery, stealing. Now we have a statement, Chazal, our sages tell us, in one of the minor Maseches and Maseches Smachas, Kol HaGoinav, anyone who is a thief, who steals, Ki'ilu Oyved Aveda Zara. It's as if he has worshipped an idol. In other words, our sages make a comparison, make an equivalency between gneiva, thievery, and idolatry. Now, this is not the only time in Jewish thought that we have an act which is considered to be on par and just like Aveda Zara. But when we do that, when we say that when you do this, it's like you worshipped an idol, that's not merely to say it's very serious. You know, just as Aveda Zara, idol worship is the big no-no of Judaism. So this is also a big no-no. That's not what our sages are trying to tell us. When they make an equivalency to Aveda Zara, it's because there's something unique about that act, in this case, Gneva, the properties of which are similar to idol worship. Because if it just meant to equate the two, the truth is, as the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya at length, every time someone violates one of the 365 prohibitions, violates a divine will, they're essentially committing idol worship. Essentially, the second of the Ten Commandments, don't have any other gods. From there, anytime someone commits an act, an Aveira, they're basically having another god. They're not being Mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. They're not accepting the yoke of heaven. So if we're highlighting, we're honing, we're specifying specific acts, and we're saying those are like idolatry, it's because there's something about the properties of those acts which are congruent, which are similar to, which are connected to, which are the same as idol worship. And the question becomes, what is the relationship, what is the connection between Gneva, idol worship, and Avodah Zarah, idolatry? Okay, let's put that aside. The very end of Maseches Sanhedrin, the Mishnah, the last Mishnah, the end of the last Mishnah tells us, quotes a pasuk in the Torah. This is referring to an Ir HaNidachas, a city that has been designated a city of idol worship, and majority of the residents of that city have worshipped an idol. And we hand out capital punishment to whoever committed the crime, and then we take all the property. We put all the property in the center of the city, and it all has to be destroyed. And the Torah tells us, don't touch any of that property. That property is chayrim. It's has a ban on it. You're not allowed to touch it. It has to be destroyed. And if you do that, then God's anger will not flare up and God will not turn his back on you. That's what the pasuk says. Says the Mishnah, it's kol zman sh'rasham ba'ilam. For as long as there are rishayim, wicked people in the world, charenaf ba'ilam, God's anger flares up in this world. That's the Mishnah. Torah says, don't take any of the property. If you do so, God's anger won't flare up. The Mishnah says, as long as there are wicked people in this world, God's anger flares. The Gemara asks the question, Man Rishayim, who are wicked people? I'm Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef answers, Ganve, thieves. The Gemara says, the Rabbi says, whoa, hold on over here. We're now concluding an entire tractate, an entire study of Sanhedrin. We've discussed in great detail what a Rasha means, a wicked person. It has a halachic, technical, legal definition. Now you're asking me, Man Rishayim, who's a wicked person? Good morning, America. What do you mean, who's a wicked person? We just studied a whole tractate. What kind of question is that? And then the answer is even more strange, because in Jewish law, a Rasha, a wicked person, is not limited just to someone who's stolen something. Not just to the guy who steals something. No. Anybody who violates any of the commandments of the Torah is considered a Rasha. So that person would not be kosher for testimony, would not be allowed to adjudicate justice, etc. What kind of question is the Gemara asking? Who are these Rishayim that God is angry about? And the answer, Rav Yosef, they're thieves. What's going on over here? Got to be more to it. Indeed, the Mefarshim, the commentaries on the Gemara address this, and they understand the Gemara in the following way. They understand the Gemara is asking the question. One second over here. We're talking about a city of Ir Hanidachas. We're talking about a city of idolaters, right? All the idolaters have been killed. This capital punishment has been handed out. So what do we mean that, what does the Mishnah mean? So long as there are the evil, the wicked in this world, God's anger flares. The wicked people are gone. We're talking about an Ir Hanidachas. Now they're gone. They're not here anymore. What do we mean when we say, so long as those wicked people are here, there is God's anger flaring here? What does that mean? And that's why the Gemara answers. The Gemara says, ah, ha, 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 ha. We're talking about a different wicked person. We're not talking about a guy who's one of the people who was engaged in the actual act of idolatry. No, 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 no. We're referring to someone who goes, he sees all this property. He sees a real nice diamond necklace, which had some connection to the idol worship, the property of the people of the city, and he goes and steals it. Uh-huh. That's the Rasha. And when that person, so long as he's around in the world, God's anger is flaring. That's the way the Mefarshim understand this Gemara. The Gemara is trying to understand the Mishnah. That's the job of the Gemara. The Mishnah says, so long as the wicked are there, God's anger is flaring. The Gemara says, Man Rashaim, which wicked people? They're all dead. The answer is, it's the people who stole the property that shouldn't have been stolen. Okay? That's the way the Mefarshim answered the question. And the Rebbe says, okay, that seems rational and that seems understandable. But if that's the case, let the Gemara say that. It asks a question, who are the Rishayim? It should have answered, the Rishayim are the people who went to the city and they took from the Chayram. Yidbak biyadcham and Achayram, they cleave, they took their hand, and they took out of this property. The Gemara says, ganve, thieves. As if the problem here is that they stole something. Why is that the problem? What, God's anger is flaring because of the fact that they violated the mitzvah and they took the stuff from the city of idolatry. And in truth, the truth is that it's not even clear if someone who takes this stuff, the guy who took this diamond necklace, is not even clear if he's considered a ganav. Because a ganav is when you take someone's property. Are you really a ganav when you take something from the public banned loot? Is that really considered gneva? That's a discussion that the Gemara itself has. It's not clear. The bottom line is we do, in a conventional sense, refer to him as a ganav. Hagoinav ben acherim, we use that term. We know when the Jews came into Israel, and they had a war, and there was spoils of war, and they weren't supposed to touch those spoils. They were sort of put aside, and a man by the name of Achan comes, and it says, Vagam Gonvu. It uses the word Geneva there when he comes and he takes those spoils. Okay, the word Geneva can refer to someone who steals from that stuff. But why is the Gemara accentuating and highlighting the fact that he's a Ganav? If you want to tell me who the Rishayim are that we're referring to, say the guys who took that stuff from the Ir Hanidachas. Why the word Ganav? Obviously, there's something about the word ganav that brings to God's anger flaring up over here that we're going to have to discuss. Okay, let's move further. So we had the Mishnah that talks about God's anger flaring. The Gemara says, who are these people who are the Rishayim, the ones who steal? And then the Gemara quotes a Braisa. A Braisa is a teaching from the Mishnah, from the sages of the Mishnah, the time of the Mishnah, right? The Tanaic sages who lived towards the end of the Second Temple and after the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash. From them, we have a lot of teachings from them, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi came and he condensed, codified, really in a very concise, succinct fashion, put it all together and gave us the Mishnah. The Braises are things that he left out, teachings from those sages, usually more free-flowing, either repetitions or other opinions, and some usually have more length to them. And the Braisa and the Gemara now continues with the Braisa along the same theme. It says, Tanur Rabbanan, our sages taught us in a Braisa, Rasha Baloilam. When the wicked come to the world, charoin bo loilam, anger, God's anger comes to the world. And quotes a pasuk, when the Rasha comes, then shamefulness comes, and disgrace comes, and being brought down comes. And when the wicked leave the world, then there's goodness. And then the entire tractate ends and concludes by telling us, tzadik bo loilam, when a tzadik comes to the world, then goodness comes to the world, and we have a sentence where Noah came into the world. Finally, there was some relief. There was some goodness that came into this world. Fine. So as you can see, the Braisa sort of echoes the sentiment in the Mishnah, but in a more free-flowing, more lengthy word, manner. Okay. But there was one word that the Braisa left out. That's uncharacteristic. The Braisa has things that are longer, not shorter. I don't know if you caught it. The Mishnah said, when the Rishayim are in the world, charoin af. God's anger, af, flares. The word af You know, Umar means nose. You know, you see the comics where you see the guy getting angry and there's fire coming out of his nose. So that's flaring. The anger flares. The Mishnah says, Rasha Bala, the Braisa leaves out the word af. It says, Rasha Bala Ilam, Charoin Bala Ilam. Just as anger, God's anger is in the world. It leaves that word out. And the question is why? Why is the Braisa leaving out? That's not what Braisas do. They add. They don't diminish. If the Braisa is trying to mimic and copy the words of the Mishnah, then it should say Charoin af. And if it's just teaching a separate teaching, then it should really follow the words of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Ra, that's evil. There's badness, there's calling, there's shame, there's disgrace. Why the word charin? So you're using the word charin, but not the word af. The last piece of the puzzle before we pull it all together, as the Rebbe is going to do for us, is as follows. The word af refers specifically to idol worship. Anytime you see God's anger flaring, it refers specifically to idol worship. So therefore, let's get something clear, says the Rebbe. The Mishnah is referring to a very specific case. It's referring to someone who went ahead to that Ir HaNidach as a city of idol worship. He went ahead, he stole this item that was, we use an example of a diamond necklace, and he stole it. He arouses God's charoin af, the flaring up of his anger. Why? Because that's a connection to idol worship. So the Mishnah is referring to the case of Ir HaNidach. The Braisa is referring generally to a Rasha. Someone who's committed and violated one of the prohibitions of the Torah. So therefore, it doesn't mention the word af. It doesn't say flaring. It just says God's charoin, God's anger. So the Mishnah and the Braisa are really referring to two separate situations. Fine. But why the word charoin at all in the Braisa? Why even mention anger in the Braisa? That's not characteristic if we're just referring to a Rasha in general. A Rasha, a wicked person. So you can say he brings Ra into the world, he brings evil into the world. Why the word charoin? You're sort of using charoin, but you're not using charoin. What is there about anger and Russia that go the Braisa that go together with this Russia? And this shalot now is now going to become beautifully clear, and we're going to now create some clarity out of what seems to be a haze. And here we go. And it really all boils down to one word, which really is the key to understanding everything. You see, the Sifri. The Sifri is a halachic medrash, and it quotes the same pasuk, same sentence. It says, hey, don't take anything from the spoils, from the property of the Ir HaNidachas. And if you do, then kol zman sha'avoy dezara ba'olam. So long as there is property that had relation to an idolater in this world, then God's anger is still flaring. That diamond necklace still exists. That means there's still part of idolatry in this world. God's anger still flares. That seems to be very, very straightforward. The Torah says, don't get God angry. If you take it, then you're going to see that you haven't destroyed it. Well, that has to be destroyed. So long as it's not destroyed, it's still in the world. God's anger is still in the world. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. That's what the Sifri says. The Mishnah says, as long as the Rishaim, those people are in the world, God's anger flares. Here's what the Mishnah and the Braisa and the entire Gemara is really dealing with. The question is, just because I went ahead yesterday and I stole a diamond necklace that was belonged to Avodah Zarah, so long as I'm in the world, God's anger is still there? I don't mean me. So long as the person who stole it, God's anger is still there? What if the person went and then destroyed the diamond necklace? But it doesn't say in the Mishnah, then you're okay. No, God's anger is still there so long as the Russia is in the world. That was the Gemara's question, Man Rishayim. The Gemara wants to understand the Mishnah. Mr. Mishnah, I don't understand you. What are you saying? In the Sifri, it's very understandable. So long as the diamond necklace is in the world that was related to idol worship, God's anger. But Mishnah, you're talking about the individual, the person who committed the act. Why? Why so long as he, the one who stole, what is it about him? Why is God's anger still there if the item of idolatry is no longer there? And the Gemara answers that by one word, Gamvi. Rabbi Yosef says, Ganav. You know why God's anger is still there? Because he stole the property. He stole the property related to idolatry. You see, there's something very unique when it comes to Gneva, when it comes to stealing something. And that is, halachically and in Jewish law, we see a thief as someone who is perpetually, continuously stealing. He now retains that identity. He is now a thief. So if someone ate chazer, they are someone who once ate chazer, they once ate pork, but now they're someone who did an aveira. Fine, but they're not called a pork eater. When it comes to stealing, every moment that you have not returned that item, every moment that you have not put that item in its proper place, you are perpetually continuing the act of stealing. After all, you have it on your property. It's there. And so long as you've done teshuva, so long as you have not done teshuva, you are considered a thief. And by the way, the Rambam, based on this, the Rangachavar, the famed great giant genius, explains the Rambam. He says, you know, we have different mitzvahs in the Torah where different sins in the Torah that can be clarified, they can be rectified. So, like an example, Nisar. Let's say every carbon, every time you're offering, it has an expiration date. You can use this for 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, whatever it is. After that time period, you're not allowed to leave the carbon past that time period. If you leave the meat out there, you violated a prohibition of the Torah. But once you do violate the prohibition of the Torah, you have a way to make up for it. It's called a lav hanita klasei. Now you can go ahead, you can burn that meat, and you have rid yourself of the sin that you have committed. That's the way you can rectify what you've done. You retroactively can sort of almost go back in time and say, aha, it's now burned. I haven't violated the aveir. But when it comes to stealing something, the Rambam doesn't use those words. The Rambam doesn't say, hey, once you return it, then you've made up for what you've done. He uses the word lav shenitan litashlumin. If you violated a prohibition, you can pay back, but you can never go back in time. In other words, you committed the act of thievery yesterday. Well, till today, you're considered a thief. Now you pay it back. From here going forward, you are not violating you're not violating the mitzvah, but you are still considered a thief for that amount of time because perpetually you are perpetuating the act of thievery. And therefore, now we'll understand the Gemara beautifully. What was the Gemara's question? If you'll remember, the Gemara's question is, why so long as he is in the world? Why is God still angry? Maybe he destroyed the diamond necklace already. The answer is because so long as he has not done teshuva, so long as he has not repented, as he's remained a ganav, he is now still connected to that cherem. He's now connected to that banned property. He's connected to idolatry. There's some remnant of idolatry in this world, and therefore charein af ba'olam. Therefore, God's rage, God's anger is still raging, is still af, is still inflared in this world. That's because of the unique designation of a ganav. A ganav has something unique about the ganav. That's what the Gemara's question was, that the Gemara's answer. That's why I used the word ganav. And now the Braisa comes in. The Braisa is not referring to the ganav. He's not referring to someone who had a connection to idolatry. That's why it doesn't mention the word af, flaring of anger. It's referring to a Rasha, a regular Rasha. When a Rasha, let's say we talk about someone who eats pork, okay? Does that act perpetually of eating pork continue? No. But the moment they eat pork, now there is an obligation that comes to them. You know what obligation that is? The obligation to do teshuva. The minute someone does something wrong, now they immediately have an obligation to return to Hashem. This is actually a discussion among a lot of the later halachic authorities, if you actually have to fulfill the mitzvah of teshuva, or is teshuva more like the mitzvah of, say, shechita? You don't have to slaughter an animal. If you want to eat an animal, you got to slaughter it in order to eat it. Some people look at teshuva that way. Some people say, hey, you've committed an aveira. Fine. If you want to return to God, here's how you do it. You do it in this fashion. No. The way the Rebbe understands the Rambam, there's another entire sikha about this. The Rebbe understands the Rambam such that, not just the Rambam, but the way we approach teshuva, the minute someone does something wrong, they now have an obligation to do teshuva. And so long as they're not doing teshuva, they're perpetually in violation of the mitzvah of not doing teshuva. And therefore, Rasha baloilam, charein baloilam. The moment they're more that when there is Rasha, there is charein, there is anger. Not in the same way. Now remember, when the ganav was perpetually stealing, okay, the other person who ate the pork wasn't perpetually eating pork. He had done it once. What he's perpetually doing is not doing teshuva. So it's not the same type of perpetual, therefore different. It's not af. You're not continuing the same idolatry. Okay. But in a certain way, there every time someone does not do teshuva, they are now continuing. God's anger is brewing there in the world. Okay. This sort of puts together a little bit what's going on over here. However, a few points, three points, which Rebbe brings before his climax and his conclusion. Point number one. Why a ganav and not a gazlan as well? We know in Judaism, there is thievery and there is robbery. Thievery means when you steal something and you try not to get caught. Robbery is when you do so out in the open, armed robbery. This unique designation of the perpetual element that the moment that when you steal something, that you are continually connected to that act, so long as it's in your property, so long as you haven't returned and done and repented properly. That's true of robbery as well. So why, when you're answering man Rishayim, who are these Rishayim? Why does it only say someone who goes and secretly takes from this Irani Dachas, takes the diamond necklace? Why is it not also a robber, someone who goes openly out in the open and says, hey, give me the diamond necklace from the Avodah Zarah? Does not he also perpetually have a connection to the idolatry, to the item of idolatry? Does he not also continue to flare God's anger? Why only mention Ganav? Either mention Ganav and Gazlan or just Gazlan. Why only Ganav? Point number one. Point number two. I understand why when someone does an Avera, they are immediately perpetually not doing the mitzvah of tshuva. Fine, that's a bad thing. But why the charein? Why the anger element of it? What is it that's anger? What is it the anger element of it? Again, the word anger, although not like af, which is idolatry, but charein also has some very severe connotation, referring a little bit to idolatry in some way, shape, or form. Why is that? Why, going back to the Braisa that's referring to generally someone who just doesn't do teshuva, why use the word charon? To understand this, the Rebbe takes us to a Gemara in Baba Kama, a famous Gemara, where the students of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, they asked him, they said, Rebbe, why is it that when someone steals something, the Torah treats it more severely than when someone robs? Because when someone steals something, hush, hush, they have to pay back the compensation is double. Sometimes you have to pay more than double, four times, five times. But when you rob, you don't have to do that. Why does the Torah treat the thief more severely than it treats the robber? And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai answered very simply. He says, the robber is consistent. He doesn't care about what people think. He doesn't care about what God thinks. He's out in the open. I'm doing it. The thief cares about what other people think. The thief is trying not to get caught. But he doesn't care about what God thinks because he thinks God's not watching. Therefore, thievery really, out of the two, thievery really underscores Avodah Zarah, idolatry. It's a denial of God. It's a denial of our gneva in its very essence is saying, God won't see me. That's why the Gemara says, man Rishayim, who are these Rishayim who perpetually continue God's anger to flare Charenah? Those who Ganav, those who went into the city and who took the diamond ring secretly. Because in so doing, not only are they perpetually connected to the act of Avodah Zarah by their mere being in the world, even if the object isn't there, just them being there is a perpetual, they're perpetuating their connection to Avodah Zarah in the world. But the fact that they did so in secret, the fact that they did so without getting caught or trying not to get caught, that also highlights and expresses Avodah Zarah. And the truth is that every Avera to a certain degree has this element to it. As you know, the famous Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he told the students, he said, may it be God's will that you fear God as much as you fear other people. And they said to him, Rebbe, shouldn't we fear God a lot more? He said, halavai, if only you fear God and you're as scared of God as you are of other people, because when someone sins, they look around, they say, no one's looking, they don't want to get caught. In other words, every time someone does an Avera to a certain degree, there's a certain charoin, there's a certain anger that they have invoked. Because to a certain degree, there is an element of Avodah Zarah there. There is an element of denying God's watchful eye over creation. And therefore, even the Braisa mentions the word charoin, because charoin exists, the anger exists. Now, it's a Havran after all. We're celebrating the conclusion of studying an entire tractate of Sanhedrin. Well, as the Rebbe always does, let's see how this theme relates to the very beginning, the beginning of the entire tractate of Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin opens discussing the functions of courts, different size courts of 3, 23, of 71, and they all face a function. They all function. Their function is obviously to prosecute, to make sure that the law is carried out. But their role is not merely to judge things ex post facto after the fact. They have a responsibility to make sure that people don't sin to begin with. Indeed, our sages tell us that the Sanhedrin of 71, the Supreme Court of the Jewish people, the Supreme Court that sat on the Temple Mount, they are obligated to go out with chains around them, to lift up their pants, which is an expression meaning to get in the mud, to get all dirty, and to go out to teach people Judaism and to make sure that they know the law so that they don't come to sin, they don't come to violate the divine will. Now we're talking about great people here. We're talking about the Sanhedrin. This is the creme de la creme. This is the Supreme Court. These are the sages, the giants, the geniuses of the Jewish people. And what are they doing? They're going to the dregs of society. They're going to the slums. They're going to all these people. And what are they doing? Making sure and ensuring that there will be no sin. That's how the entire tractate ends. Do you know why they do that? Why is it? Why do we take such people? Is this lefik vaydam? Is this honorable for them? The answer is yes. Because in so doing, they are holding back God's anger from the entire world, not just perpetually in time, but in space as well. In so doing, they are ensuring that Jewish people do not, that God's anger is not present in this world. And now we understand the connection between the very beginning of the Masechta and the end of the Masechta. The beginning of the Masechta tells us the job of the court. Do you know why it's their job? Well, look at the very end of the Masechta. Look at the very end. It's because of the severity and the gravity of what violating the divine will can cause. And like everything in the Torah, this is meant to be a lesson. The lesson here is not just to tell us, hey, sinning is really bad and doing mitzvahs is very good. We know that. We know that there are big consequences. The Torah tells us, if you sin, if you go against God's will, then God's going to create tremendous punishment. And if you do, you fulfill God's will, then God's going to place peace in the world. There's going to be blessing. There's going to be success. There's going to be prosperity. This is not just echoing a sentiment that we see throughout the Torah. There's something very important here. The Torah is telling us that someone's going to do something. Going to do something wrong. Okay, I have to do tshuva. Do it this afternoon, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it the next day. No, every moment that a Jew is not doing teshuva, God's chara in his anger, his energy is filling the entire world. This gets the Jew to do teshuva right away. Conversely, if someone is there and he's about to make a hachlat, he's about to resolve, he wants to do something good, he wants to do something new, he wants to add in his fulfillment of Torah mitzvahs. Concluding this masechta teaches us, it tells us, do it right away. Because you're going to bring goodness to the entire universe. The entire universe will be changed. And in so doing, you'll be able to bring the ultimate goodness to this world by fulfilling, doing one act, one taiva. That's how the entire Masechta of Sanhedrin concludes. And this is the Rebbe's analysis of this end of the Masechta. Tzlacha Rabba, and enjoy.